Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. Hello and welcome to The TV Carpenter. My name is Wayne Perry. On today's show, I chat with Thea Pitcher. She's a garden producer. So if you've watched shows like Alan Titchmarsh's Love Your Garden, or Garden Rescue with Charlie Dimmock and the Rich Brothers, or even The Autistic Gardener or The Great Garden Challenge on Channel 5, she is the lady behind all of these shows who makes them happen.
Need to be able to know your plants, because you need to be able to select plants for the planting for the gardens. You need to know about construction, because you need to know what materials to order. You need to know a bit about design as well, because the gardens, whether it's being designed in-house or whether it's another show and we've got presenters designing, they kind of, you know, they need to have a good brief. If it's someone else designing for you, you need to give them a good brief, so that all the gardens are different, because we can't have the same style of garden in every episode of whatever show we're working on.
Hello and welcome to The TV Carpenter. My name is Wayne Perry. This is a podcast where I interview all my friends from the world of interior design and garden makeover shows, so that you can create your dream home. And you're all probably stuck at home looking around your four walls and your garden thinking, what can I do to make this place better than it already is? I know I've mentioned it before on the podcast. We're already thinking about knocking down walls. Actually, we are going to be doing it this week. I've hired a skip, so I'll be clearing out all the rubbish and be knocking down walls this week. And hopefully this podcast is there to help you and encourage you and inspire you, so that you can create your dream homes, like I say, by interviewing some amazing guests. And firstly, I have to say a huge thank you to my sponsor, Thorndown Paints. I had a chat with the owners, Caroline and Ben, a few weeks ago, and they were telling me what makes their eco paint so good and why it's perfect for using in children's furniture and any sensitive areas of your house where obviously you don't want any toxic chemicals leaking from the paint. So have a little listen to this short 1 minute interview with Ben from Thorndown Paints. Thorndown is said to be like a high performance eco paint, and it's got minimal VOC. Now, I have no idea what VOC means. Can you explain that to me?
Well, VOC is volatile organic compounds. So they are sort of natural oily compounds that can evaporate off things like paint, especially spirit-based paints, oil paints and things like that, and then they can react with other things. And so they're quite nasty, and what we wanted to do was have as little chemical come out of the paint as it dried, other than water. So that was very important, and it's modern technology is very good, and the choice of raw materials that we had was very high performing. It was just a good time to be producing a paint like that. And so, yeah, so we created a paint where not very much evaporates off other than water.
So does it mean that the actual paint itself, obviously you can't drink it, it's not, you know, it's full of something, but it just means it's the bit that comes off it, the fumes that come off it, and all things like that, the drying agents that are normally really bad in glosses aren't in there. That's so it's true. Minimal. So you, when you say minimal, how much is in there?
Well, if you like your percentages, it's a maximum of 0.28% in the wood paint, 0.05 in the glass paint. But it is so small. It's zero. But with some of the raw materials, our suppliers can't guarantee that there's absolutely nothing in the whole process. And so we just put in the maximum they think, and that adds up to still virtually nothing.
What was really lovely, but in that interview with Ben, you couldn't see it, but his eyes came alive when I started asking him about stats and things. He really loves geeking out on the whole science of the paint, which is actually quite reassuring, because what I think is, if someone like him is doing that and it's his company, he cares that much about the environment, then it means that we can be having fun with the paint, knowing that it's safe to use. If you want to get hold of some Thorndown paint, contact them at thorndown.co.uk, and if you type in the code TV Carpenter, you will get 15% off any online purchases. And at the moment, they're still working. They're a family business, so they're all living together and they're managing to produce their paint and get it out to you. So even in this lockdown, you can get hold of Thorndown paint. Now, time for the main event. So I've wanted to speak to this lady for ages, but she's been travelling, she's been working, and I finally pinned her down to do the interview. And her name is Thea Pitcher. Now, Thea is a TV garden producer. So her job is behind the scenes. So behind all of these gardens or all these garden shows, there's a whole creative team behind the scenes who not only help with the garden designs, but are there to practically make the gardens happen. So she's the lady on the phone ringing for the soil to be delivered, or for the concrete to be delivered, or picking plants in the garden centre. And without this lady, all the garden shows that you have watched over the last 8 years wouldn't have happened. And she's the reason why I'm in garden TV makeover shows. She gave me my first job and then introduced me to this network of garden makeover shows. And she is beloved within the industry. So have a little listen to me having a lovely chat with my good friend, Thea Pitcher. Thea Pitcher, thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
My pleasure.
I've known you for quite a few years. To me, you're the queen of garden makeover shows. You're the person who got me involved in garden makeover shows. But within your realm, within garden makeover shows, what's your job title? I didn't know what to call you when I was introducing you.
Well, my official title is associate producer. But that kind of encompasses lots of things, so I wear many hats, as you know.
Yeah.
But that's my official title.
As a producer. So when have you always been involved in garden makeover shows?
Well, I've been quite lucky. So I started my career. I decided I wanted to be a gardener. I didn't want to spend all my time indoors. And so I didn't know anything about gardening, but I could mow lawns and cut hedges. So I set up a little business, advertised locally, and then kind of learnt on the job for a lot. And I did some night classes, just City and Girls and Gardening and the RHS certificate, and kind of just, you know, got myself a nice little round locally where I lived. And then I was getting bored, and I was like, oh, I'd really like to use my brain, you know, because a lot of people in their gardens, they have exactly the same plants, they just have them in a different order. So I was kind of a bit bored with maintaining these gardens, and I didn't know enough to kind of have some input into, you know, hey, why don't we change your garden? So one year, oh my goodness, it must have been about 14 years ago, maybe more, and Alan Titchmarsh had a series called A Year at Kew, and it was behind the scenes of the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew, near Richmond. And one episode came on, and they had a school of horticulture, and I was like, oh, wow, like, I could go there. So I said to my mum, I was like, oh, mum, what? I'm going to apply, I'm going to go there. And my mum was like, yeah, they only take sort of 12 to 14 students a year from around the globe. Like, you're never going to get in. So I was like, mum, I'm going there. So I didn't know. I looked up on the internet, and oh no, I did look up on the internet. It wasn't that good then. So
I rang
the School of Horticulture and I asked them, you know, what qualifications you needed, because I'd like to apply. And they said that there were various things, but in fact I didn't actually have the qualifications that were required. I didn't have high enough qualifications, and you also needed to have 2 years practical experience in a recognised horticulture establishment. But I'd run my own business for 5 years, and I sort of had a chat, said, look, I haven't got exactly what you're asking for, but I think my skills are transferable, and is it worth me applying? And they said, oh yeah, absolutely, please apply. So I duly applied. And I couldn't believe it when I got shortlisted and called for an interview. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever. I just thought, you know, I probably won't get in, but I'm just going to enjoy getting, you know, going for an interview at the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew at the School of Horticulture, because that's actually where Alan Titchmarsh trains. So, you know, it's got some fantastic people who've been through there. Anyway, so I went for my interview and I'd done quite a bit of revision, and we had, though it was quite, it was quite in depth. We had a plant identification test. You had to name, there were sort of like about 30 plants on a table, and you had to give the full Latin name for at least 10 of them. We had pests and diseases identification. We had season propagation. I had to talk my way around a cylinder mower. It was all quite full on. And then it ended with a panel interview with sort of four of the top, there was a principal of the School of Horticulture. There was all sort of top people at Kew. Uh-huh. Anyway, I decided to enjoy myself because I wasn't going to get in, and I would just really enjoy myself. So we had quite good fun. I made them laugh. And then about 6 weeks later, I got offered a place, and I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. In fact, I kept thinking they'd ring and say, we've made a mistake. Anyway, so I studied horticulture at Kew, which is a 3-year full-time course, of which you spend some of the time in the gardens or in the glasshouses on actual practical placements, learning things practically. Uh-huh. And then you spend the rest of the time in a lecture block, and they're kind of 9 to 5. And throughout the year, you have plant identification tests, and it's quite full on, and you cover everything from plant physiology, biochemistry, design, soil science. So it's quite a wide-ranging course to go on. And I was in my final few months, actually. And the BBC got in touch with Kew and said, we are looking for someone to be a runner for our coverage of the Chelsea Flower Show. Have you got any students who'd be interested? And I had a couple of weeks leave to take. So I said, oh, you know what? That'd be really interesting. So I applied and got accepted. So I did 2 weeks on the Chelsea Flower Show as a runner, which actually, compared to most TV shows, runners often, you know, look after the presenters making tea and coffee. But mine was actually more kind of horticultural, so I would have to work out where we were doing an item, you know, we were doing a little clip on, I don't know, plants plants that came from China but were thought of as quintessentially English. So I'd have to go around the gardens and find things like, I don't know, wisteria or rhododendrons or things like that, and then, you know, obviously discuss these with the presenters and things like that. So it was a really good introduction into sort of TV. And then when I finished the 2-week contract, they said, look, apply to be in our pool of runners, because we have a pool of runners which we call upon for all our other gardening shows. So I did that, and then I went back to Kew, and I graduated, and then I got called to say, would I like to work on Hampton Court Flower Show? So I did that. Then I did the following year, I did Chelsea, and then I went and joined the Gardeners World team as a researcher. Uh-huh. And so that's how I kind of got into TV. And then I got a call, I think I've been at the BBC about 18 months, from Spungold TV, who produced Alan Titchmarsh's shows. And at the time, he had his chat show in the afternoon, and they were wanting to do some gardening items on it. And I got a call. I'd been recommended to them to come and work on the gardening segment of the Alan Titchmarsh show. So I was like, well, that sounds great. And all the gardening programs used to be produced out of Birmingham, so I used to have to commute up on a Monday, rent a room, stay till Friday, come back. And the contracts were only sort of March till October when the growing season was. Uh-huh. But this was great because this was actually, I think, must have been about the end of the season. It was about September, October. So it was a couple of months winter contract. I was like, that's great. And it's London based, brilliant. So I did that. That was great fun. Studio show, you know, it was all quite mad. And then Alan was in discussions with setting up Love Your Garden. That got signed off and commissioned by ITV. And obviously I was already in the office working on the Alan Titchmarsh show. So I then became part of the kind of initial team to work on Love Your Garden. So
you were part of Love Your Garden from the beginning?
Love Your Garden started off, he got commissioned for Love Your Garden. The initial first series was like a magazine format show. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't makeovers, but they then decided they wanted to do makeover shows. And so I was there from the birth. So it feels like it's my baby. I've been there from the very beginning.
Yes. And did you ever think about being like, obviously we've got, you know, Katie and Frances on there. Did you ever think about being like one of those girls in front of the camera?
Not really. I don't think.
Not your bag. Not your bag.
Well, I have been dragged onto other shows in front of the camera.
Yeah.
but I've managed to keep that one to a minimum.
But your knowledge and the way I, you know, it's amazing seeing all your background. But the way obviously I know you is you dragged me onto the Autistic Gardener. But you're like the person who makes it happen. So you're like the site foreman. You liaise with not only the presenters and the directors, but you're the one organising, you know, the builders. They're getting deliveries. You know, you're if we need anything, we speak to you, and you're on the phone organising the deliveries and stuff like that. How did you find that? Was that something you've always done, or because it's a hard job to do what you do, you know, to manage the expectations and the show.
You have to be able to, like I said earlier, many hats, juggle lots of balls.
Yeah.
I am also a landscaper as well. So I understand construction. It's kind of a tricky one, really. To be able to work, you know, to do the job I do, is you kind of need to know quite a lot of things about a lot of things. I did everything from the casting, which would be deciding who goes, who actually gets the gardens done on the shows, for something like Love Your Garden.
Yeah.
But for, you know, for not just Love Your Garden, but, you know, the Autistic Gardener, you know, many other shows I've done. You need to be able to know your plants, because you need to be able to select plants for the planting for the gardens. You need to know about construction, because you need to know what materials to order. You need to know a bit about design as well, because the gardens, whether it's being designed in-house or whether it's another show and we've got presenters designing, they kind of, you know, they need to have a good brief. If it's someone else designing for you, you need to give them a good brief, so that all the gardens are different, because we can't have the same style of garden in every episode of whatever show we're working on.
So you
need to be organized and unflappable. You just have to keep calm, you know, because things do go wrong.
Yeah,
they don't always go wrong, but there have been, you know, one or two kind of occasions, and you just need to be able to think, right, what can I do? Right, like, how can I fix this?
Absolutely. So let's talk you through the process, say, of Love Your Garden. Obviously, it's an ITV show, Alan Titchmarsh. You've got four presenters on that. And we do probably about 8 episodes a year, generally. I want to talk about the design side of it. Designs a garden? Who designs the gardens for Love Your Garden?
So it's the gardens for Love Your Gardener is designed as almost like a team effort. So myself, having met the families and Alan, plus the series producer, we will have obviously spoken to the family. Yeah, we've found out quite a lot about them. So from that, there'll be a list of wants or needs for the garden. So it will need, I don't know, wheelchair access, or, you know, we will need to have a garden building, or, you know, or whatever. So there'll be some things that we know that we need to get in. And then the producers come on board, and we also have a family researcher. So there's quite a big team behind the scenes. And the family researcher and the producers will find out a lot more about the families, and finding out kind of things about their background, you know, whether there's, I don't know, places they've been to visit, things they like, colours they like, things they like to do. We have built up a bigger picture of this person. And then the garden design kind of comes out of a marriage between the two, really. So we'll want, you know, there are all these things that we need to fit into the garden. And then kind of like, you know, the style of these people, you know, what they actually like, that will kind of lead you to what the garden will look like. On top of that, you do have to, like I just said, you have to make sure that no two garden looks the same.
Yeah.
So, which is quite tricky, really, because, you know, it sounds easy to have them. Oh, you can have them at eight different styles. But, you know, you couldn't really even run a couple of episodes back to back that had, you know, gardens that were based on a circular design. So, so it's quite a team effort. Yeah.
So who draws them up then? So do you guys sit and do the drawing, or do you send it away to somebody?
Generally not. We generally have a designer who will design to our brief, and they've always got the patience of a saint, because they'll often design something and it'll come back and it'll go to Alan, it'll come to me, and, you know, the team will have a look at it,
yeah,
and we'll say, yeah, that's great, but we need to change that, simply because the designer is designing for a brief. We're designing not only for the garden, what the garden looks like, but also for content for the program.
Yes.
Which is actually another thing that we have to make sure, because if you've got gardens and things that look the same, you're not going to have new content for each episode. And so we're often, you know, my job is to look for additional content within the design, you know, new things, you know, new ways of doing things. Are there different ways of decorating walls? You know, have we got different ways of having surfacing in the garden? And so I'm constantly looking out for sort of new, innovative kind of ways of doing things differently. You know, we love Pinterest. There's always something, you know, someone's done on there. You think, oh wow, we could try that. Yeah. Or some stuff we just make up ourselves.
And I love that. And I think that's why I've done quite well with you guys and the team at the Garden Show. Is so many, you've got four presenters, so each of them need to have an area or something to explore. They've all been given now makey do's, you know, So that's another, you know, and then of the director will need certain inputs. He'll like story threads going through. And I know with me now, they kind of go, right, we want a barbecue area or something building. And then they'll leave me to run with it. And that hopefully creates another story for that presenter. There's so much goes into these shows. Is there any? I've chatted with Alan about this before, and we were saying there's so many things about, like, for example, with Alan, there's certain do's and don'ts. You know, we know his flower beds have to be a certain depth. Like, you know, it's like an industry standard. Like, Alan's not going to like that, so we need to dig it lower. Or he doesn't like wind chimes, so we're not putting a wind chime in.
You know, there are plants as well that, you know, some of them love and some of them hate. You know, Alan's not a great fan of petunia, if I remember rightly. So, yeah, there are things that, I know about. I think, obviously, having worked with them for years, you know, I know these things. And obviously, they're things that I can tell, you know, anyone else who comes and does my job, because it's not just me. There's normally one other. We do half the episodes each. We're quite a good team, you know. Yeah. I think, you know, because we've worked together for all that time, we do know, you know, what their likes and dislikes.
Yeah. And so with Love Your Garden, we'll stick with that one for now, because it's ITV. Obviously, most of the garden is donated. But do you have a budget?
Yeah.
Obviously, negating what we get paid, we're paid by the channel. But do you have a materials budget for each episode?
I do, and it's small.
It's small. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a minimal budget to pay for bits, and everything else
tiny.
Just sourced.
Yeah. Sorry.
Is everything else then just like donated then?
Donated, and we are so grateful and so lucky to be supported by all the companies, you know, who donate not just products but plants as well. You know, it's you know, the industry's you know, it's not. You know, it's not necessarily the most buoyant of industries. You know, a lot of smaller nurseries and people kind of, you know, they don't make massive profits.
Yeah.
But the industry is incredibly supportive, and we're really blessed, because if we wouldn't be able to make the gardens we make on the budget that we're given.
Yeah.
And you know, that also was a discussion that we had before we started with it. You know, what did we want to achieve? You know, did we want to, you know, what did we want the show to look like? How are we going to achieve it? You know, were the budgets, you know, what was the best way to work the budgets? And I spoke to quite a lot of, you know, suppliers and things, and before, you know, we made a decision and got their feedback. You know, obviously it works both ways. So people who supply on the program get publicity from it.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, for us, the families that we build the gardens for, you know, they get amazing things in the garden, and you know, and companies are so, so generous. And in fact, a lot of them don't do it for the publicity. You know, they just do it because, you know, just because they're kind.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's really lovely.
Yeah.
But you know, we try and support our, you know, the people who supply us as much as possible. You know, we have a website and social media, you know, various social media avenues, and can provide, you know, we provide them with photos and things like that. So it's nice to try and support that. You know, give back as much as they've given us.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I remember it's a hard, even though it is ITV, we can. You know, you can product placement, as it were. But I remember there's sometimes where we might have used a certain wheelbarrow, and it's so distinctive, the channel have gone, that's too much. We need to get rid of that, or swap things around a little bit. How many spots are it? Because for people who like some of the big things that are donated, whether it's a big greenhouse or a, you know, some decking or some fence panels,
you get
certain. Is it spots like product?
Yeah,
how many of those are you allowed?
So we get five. Sort of high value. I say high value. It's not necessarily high value. It could be a regular supplier who just supplies us for stuff that isn't high value. But you know, they've supported us for a long time. So it's generally either high value or a regular sort of donated to the program. We have five spots per episode where we can put the product name and the company name on screen.
Uh-huh.
We used to put the price. I don't think we put the price anymore.
No, I think you have to go to the website,
we
don't you? Yeah, I think you go to the website for that.
But then obviously, you know, people know the name of the product, because we find that we get a lot of emails, you know, and a lot of visits to the website and to social media asking, you know, what things are. I mean, everything is listed, all our suppliers and what's been supplied is listed on our website for people to find.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do still find, you know, we get a lot of questions. You know, people are really keen to know what products we're using. You know, the effect of TV is quite amazing on, you know, on what people want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we try to be innovative and come up with new things, so it's not just the same things you've seen, you know, in other programs or in magazines and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, we tried our. I mean, so I've sat there racking my brains. You know, what can we do? What can be different? You know, with our planting schemes. Obviously, the first series, you know, we were able to do shady planting. You know, sunny planting. You know, plants for damp areas and things like that. But once you've done that in the first series, you can't really go back to that again. In the second series, you've got to find more interesting ways of presenting it.
Yeah.
So we would think of, I don't know, we might have a family who are really into sort of dancing, and say, yeah, we'd have a family into dancing. I remember one year, and what did I come up with? Oh, I think we came up with the idea of having a border full of plants which had names which related to dancers. So I think it was something like Rosa Darcy Bustle and, you know, something like that. But it's just finding different ways. And it is theming them in a way, but I think it works. And people remember things quite well if you actually present them in that way. They'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I can remember the dancing plants. Whereas if you actually said, oh, we're going to plant this rose and this, and, it might not stick so hard. So we hope that it also makes things easy to remember, and in the same way our gardens are sort of themed as well.
Yeah.
And that really helps the viewer to remember. They'll say, oh, you know, I remember the, had a complete blanket. So, I remember the festival garden that you did. That was amazing. You know, you don't have to remember who it was, or, you know, not necessarily, you're not going to remember everyone's names, but yeah, I could remember probably all the gardens by their themes.
Yeah. So I'll talk about remembering that. Then, what has been your favourite garden you've worked on?
We had it's still my favourite. So we did a garden for a family called the Cahoons, and that was down in the West Country somewhere. What, Somerset maybe? Yeah, Somerset, I think. And their garden, it was a really quite a traditional English garden. It was quite a big size, and it just looked beautiful, and it had hydrangea annabelle and lavender, and we had painted white trellis, which I accidentally ended up spraying someone's car with the paint.
I heard about that, yes. I remember that.
Yeah, there's not been many things that have happened. Thankfully it was me and not someone, you know, one of the runners. They'd probably be really in trouble. I have to say, hand on my heart, I did take care, and it was really unfortunate. I set up a spray station to spray some trellis, and there was a lot of this trellis, so it was way too much to do them by hand. I had it there. I had boards. There was a hedge, big, thick laurel hedge, boards all the way around, tall enough, you know, much taller than my trellis, so that in case there was any drift, sprayed everything fine. I had a couple of coats each. Great. Anyway, this lady came round and said, excuse me, she said, you've sprayed my car. And I was thinking, how's this possible? There's no car near me. Anyway, there was a footpath behind the hedge, which she parked her car on, which was slightly annoying.
Yeah.
And there had been some really, really fine drift. Well, I went round and I couldn't see any paint on the car.
Uh-huh.
And then she took me to it, and there was an ever so really, really fine mist of paint. It just looked like a slight bit of dust, but it was actually paint over the entire car. The windscreen, the plastic, the bodywork was like, oh my God. So we got a valeter to come, tea cut it, wouldn't tea cut out. And in fact, in the end, it might have been a write-off. I didn't find out. I passed the office. I rang the office and messed up straight away. But, you know, that was... not many things happen. Yeah, not many things happen like that. In fact, I don't think anything's ever happened like that. It was me. So thankfully, it was me.
But even so, that's your favourite garden then?
It was a beautiful garden. It was picture perfect. It looked amazing. Yeah. But that said, you know, it's quite hard to choose from. I mean, there've been some amazing ones. You know, some of the first ones, they were great because we'd never done it before, and yeah, we didn't really know what we were doing, and you know, they looked amazing in the end. Despite, you know, you're thinking, oh my God, how's this going to pull together? You know, everyone was new.
Yeah.
So some of them are special just because, you know, we were all just starting off. You know, we were a brand new team. The festival garden, actually, I mentioned, that was really great fun. That had flags around it, and bunting, and yeah, that was such a great fun garden. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's been so many.
Wow.
They're all special in a unique, in their own way.
They're all their own episode, but each comes with its own challenge and its excitement, and the teams
absolutely
are different. You know, you've got your different teams, and the locations are different, so they all have
and the families are different, you know, and you grow really close to the families, because you're kind of, you know, obviously I start off, I've interviewed them, you know, maybe months before we built the garden, and then you have this intense period of dealing with them just before the build as well, and then for the, you know, the 5 days, you only have 5 days to build the garden, you know, there's quite, you know, the families are at home for some of it, and, you know, it's, you know, you build up a really good rapport with them, and we have such wonderful people who we built the gardens for. They are all utterly deserving.
Yeah.
It's
brilliant. You started Garden Rescue, the one with Charlie Dimmock and the Rich Brothers. So what was the brief for that, and how did that come about?
So I can't remember how it started, but I remember being asked to do a pilot show. I think Spun Gold, again, you know, the same producers for Alan's stuff, they were in talks with Charlie and these two young guys called the Rich Brothers, who just kind of started out. I think they might have done a design for Chelsea.
I think they were the youngest winner, aren't they, of Chelsea?
Yeah, so they were really quite, yeah, they were kind of green and fresh, and they were pitching a show, a kind of, you know, a design competition and build show between Charlie and the Rich Brothers to the BBC. And so they asked me to, yeah, to do the kind of like an initial, what did I just call it?
Was it the initial pilot section
of the show, really. And we got Charlie and the Rich Brothers down, and we shot some bits, and then that was cut and sent to the channel, and from that it was commissioned. And of course that's an incredibly popular show. That's sort of daytime, I don't know, 50 odd episodes a year. It's really grown, and that's that one is, it works completely differently to Love Your Garden. So the homeowner has a budget for materials. The labour budget is covered by the channel, but the materials, and I think the materials are paid for by the client. We don't ask for anything free for that show, but obviously we have to try and see, you know, what you can get for your money and things like that. So there's a lot to work on. It's a really it's quite fast paced, and you'll probably be filming a couple of episodes a week.
I think they do something like three episodes, because I've worked on that. It's a 2-day build, isn't it? So the landscape and builders like myself, I've done about 4 or 5 of those episodes, and you go ahead of time, build, do a whole day's landscaping, and then the Rich Brothers and Charlie and sometimes Arit will come along on the second day, and we'll finish it with them, so they'll do all the planting and all that.
Yeah.
So it literally is a 2-day build. It's crazy.
It's really mad, and you know, you are kind of, that's really, you're really quite up against it, and again you need to be super organised. It's quicker from an organisational point of view for me, because you're just ordering stuff, you know, just bringing up, banging out orders. Obviously where you have people donating, you know, you need to build a relationship with them, and you know, you can't expect to get anything, you know, you have to speak to them and see whether people are willing to, and can they do it in the time frame. Whereas running the Rich Brothers, God Rescue is for me, logistically, an easier
because if you're paying for it, it should arrive when you say it's going to arrive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and people are, you know, I mean, I have to say that all suppliers that I've dealt with all the shows have been fantastic. You know, they're all, I mentioned that it's for a show, because we can't have things turn up late. You know, normally I organise everything to get there the day before it's due.
Yeah.
Because it gives you some leeway, you know, if it doesn't turn up, then you have some time, because there's no point getting something turning up when you need it.
Yeah.
Because invariably something will happen and it won't arrive and you'll be like,
I remember on that show as well, when I was working on it, it had just been recommissioned again. And they wanted something like 360 episodes. They asked for something ridiculous. And then we were like, well, when are we going to do it? When are we actually going to film it?
Yeah, I don't think it was as many as that. I'm pretty sure they tried to commission 120 or something like that. And it was just like, there just isn't the time.
Yeah.
There's not the daylight. You know, there's not the seasons. You know, you can maybe stretch from March to October or November, but you know, people would just be working full on. You know, you'd need a number of landscaping teams, and you're just going to wear your presenters out. You know, it's full on for them. You know, it's not just the team behind the scenes. You know, they're long days filming, and you know, you could be in Wales one day, and then you'd be in North Yorkshire, you know, the next, and you know, you've got to travel between and get some sleep. So that part of Garden Rescue is harder. The fact that you're all over the country.
Yeah. I think they film like 3 episodes a week, don't they? So like I say, there were alternating gardening teams, or 3 gardening teams per week. So because we're there for the 2 days, but the presenters come for the second day. So I remember, like, literally we'd do a whole day's garden, go back to the hotel, and then that evening, like, the Rich Brothers or Charlie would arrive, would have a drink with them in the bar, and then the next morning they'd film with us, and then they would leave and go to the next one. It was just, you know, 3 days a week.
Yeah.
For these guys, relentless.
It's quite a challenge.
It is.
All the driving. There's a lot of driving in my job. Loads of driving.
It is crazy. And I just remember, like, when I first met you through doing the Autistic Gardener, and you put out this help call on like a social media, going, anyone know any good gardeners who can do a bit of decking and make an outbuilding? And you know what I'm going to say, because literally I messaged you and you went, yeah, we're making a geodesic dome and we're going to do a bit of decking? And I was like, okay, so we're building this kit house, this kit outbuilding and decking. Yeah, normally I'd work on interior design shows. This is the first ever garden show. And then I remember trying to speak to you and ringing you, and you weren't answering your call because you were busy working on the shows. You're so busy when you're on site. And then literally, I think it was the day before I was due to arrive, you sent me through this piece of email
with a plan
with the geodesic dome. And I'd never met you before, but I got a measure of you. And I was like, okay, so yeah, is this a kit? And you went, no, you're making it out from scratch. And I remember swearing at you, going, what the beep? Going like, I can't do this.
No pressure.
And you were brilliant because you actually went, do you know what? If it don't work, it don't work. And we'll just say it doesn't work. But I was like, but Thea, I've never made a geodesic dome. I don't even know what geodesic is. I failed my maths 3 times.
I know.
But we made it.
And it looked amazing. Oh, it was amazing.
It was really good.
And people couldn't believe you'd made a geodesic dome. And I was like, oh, yeah. I've never seen anyone make a geodesic dome. So that's always a TV first. It's nice to have like things that you've never done before. Whatever show I work on, it's like, great, you know, let's do this. No one's ever done that. No one will ever do it since. It was hard.
It was hard. And I got the help of your lovely husband, Dino, who was assisting
me.
We did it together. And it was one of those, and I've said it before on this podcast, it was one of those things that I'm probably the most proud of because of the plan that you sent me was of a guy who worked in a workshop and all that. We did it outside in the rain, making it. And then the windows had to open like a lotus flower and it had to be all these different things. But the end result looked brilliant on camera, and from that I think we cemented a relationship where you kind of went, anything I can throw at Wayne will do. And from that, I think, you know, I've worked with on the Great Garden Challenge with you, Garden Rescue, so you've opened up this whole new world in garden makeovers.
It's a crazy world of TV garden landscaping, and we do ask, I do ask a lot of my tradesmen or landscapers, you know, if you're on the team, you got to be prepared to just try.
Yeah.
You know, I might ask you to, and normally I try and give as much notice as possible, but the nature of the show being, we're quite a fast turnaround, and actually knowing what we're doing, sometimes I'm not even knowing what we're doing until, you know, a week or two before. So, and then I've got to work out how we build things and, you know, what materials I'm going to need to get. And then I've got to say, right, this is what we're building.
I love it. I love the challenge. And the thing is, we always do it in good humour. And there's points as well I've gone, actually, that's not safe, or physically, I can't do that. It's not in the time we've got, I can't do it. But we always come up with a solution. And like I say, always be part of the solution, not the problem. And I think that's why
we
have good banter.
Outside the box.
Yeah, somewhat different. But I was looking on your Facebook recently, and what was really lovely is because everyone's on lockdown, everyone's stuck in their house. You were talking about doing veg, and everyone wants to grow veg at the moment.
Yeah,
so everyone's up for it.
Yeah.
But you had some really good top tips. I only saw the first video because a lot of people, you can't even get seeds at the moment. It's quite tricky. But you there was a few stuff that you have in your kitchen cabinet that you can plant now. So can you remember some of those? Can you just go through some of those that people could plant now?
Potatoes, they're super easy. You just everyone's got them in their cupboards, probably sprouting already. You literally just bury them with a tip above the soil. If you're planting potatoes in your garden, you should dig a trench, put them in the bottom of the trench, just cover them in soil, and then the shoot pops up. And the potatoes actually grow off the shoot, but the shoot needs to be underground to obviously grow the potatoes. Obviously, you keep mounding the soil up, but you can do that. You can do that in a pot, in a flower pot. You can even do it in a carrier bag. So if you don't have anything there, as long as you've got some holes in the bottom for drainage, if you didn't have a garden and you could hang your carrier bag off your wall, you could grow potatoes on a wall. You just need to make sure your bag has got maybe a bin bag wrapped around or something dark, because the roots need to be dark. So that's one easy one. Another one that everyone will have in their cupboard probably is garlic. It's a bit late for garlic. They prefer to be started off when it's colder, but, you know,
yeah,
probably the worst that will happen is you'll grow one big bulb of garlic rather than it breaking out into cloves. And to be fair, it's quite good fun and it keeps pests away from other veg. Other ones you might have in your cupboard, ginger. That's a tropical plant, so it'll need to be grown in a greenhouse or...
So just a fresh piece of ginger, okay. Could you just stick it...
So you can cut it out. You see the little knobbly bits, that's where it'll... The best way to do it is probably leave a bit of ginger out in the daylight and it'll start to develop little knobbles and it's called a rhizome. It's a root.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a fleshy root and it'll develop little green knobbly bits and then you can just slice it up and have one knobbly bit per plant and pop that in the soil and it'll grow. And it takes about 8 to 10 months for it to grow a decent bit of ginger for you to harvest.
So what are the knobbly bits sticking out or the knobbly bits sticking underneath?
Well, if you leave it out if you leave your bit of ginger out on the worktop, then on the top, on the uppermost side, it'll start shooting.
Yeah.
They'll look like green little lumps. It'll actually start shoots.
Yeah.
And then plant them with a shoot facing upwards in some soil. Yeah. It doesn't have to be that deep. We can just cover, just a bit up over the top of the rhizome. Not too deep. They don't like it very wet.
Yeah.
And it will grow. And in sort of 8 to 10 months, you'll have another nice, decent bit of ginger. And they have lovely flowers as well. They're nice, but they're an impressive plant, actually. They're things that people will actually have. I mean, you can grow things like pineapple tops. Yeah, you cut them off. You won't get a pineapple for some time. But they're quite fun to grow.
Yeah.
They were the ones I thought of.
Didn't you say something about peas?
Peas. I'm going to be doing a little vlog on peas. But peas are great because peas, you can grow them if you have a garden or you didn't even grow them in your house. So if you're growing them in your house, you're growing pea shoots to eat rather than the full pea plant because you won't have enough light and things. But peas are great because you can get peas from the supermarket. So like dried marrowfat peas.
Yeah.
And they're brilliant for pea shoots. So you buy them. I normally soak mine in water for 24 hours and they become sort of fleshy.
Yeah.
But that just helps them germinate quicker. You don't have to do that.
So just general dried peas that you'd buy in a bag?
Dried peas, yeah. Dried peas, not frozen peas, dried peas.
Okay.
Dried peas and dried beans, any kind of dried pulse you can grow a plant from. So,
I didn't know that. I thought they had to be specific, that germinated kind of things. So.
No, not with peas, but peas particularly. But yeah, I mean, you can grow them easily indoors. Wow. And of course, you can get them from the supermarket. So you don't have to worry about struggling to get hold of any seeds. So that's kind of four veg that you can grow, even without having any seed. Now, obviously, the seed suppliers would say that you should really buy proper seeds, because that way that they've been, they've checked they haven't got disease and things. But these are different times.
These are
we're
tough
not really
times.
Caring too much. we're not taking the business away from the seed suppliers because a lot of them are really overwhelmed with orders and
people
just can't get them anyway. So
look into that.
There's plenty of things you can do whether you've got a garden or you haven't, and that's why I wanted to do that's why I'm doing a little vlog on my Facebook, so that people can see what they can do and making it simple, because I love your garden, actually it's brilliant, and most of the shows I've worked on are great in making things really simple, and I think that's always the best way, make things simple for everyone. Can you hear my cat meowing?
I must be involved. Final question before the cat savages you, but like it does the toilet roll I've seen on your Facebook. I always ask my guests to describe to me, and it could be a garden you already have or a garden that you'd aspire to have, but in your dream home, describe to me your dream garden and also what you're drinking whilst you're in this dream garden.
Well, let's start with what I'm drinking. That's the easiest. I'm drinking a mojito. My dream garden, it'd be sunny, south facing, sea view. What would I have in it? What plants would I love lavender. I've mentioned earlier hydrangeas. Particularly the Annabelle ones, they're really lovely. Trees, currently, if it was now, there'd be cherry blossom, a wisteria around a pergola, love a nice garden building. Oh my God, I don't want much, do I?
You're such a traditionalist, Thea. Like, you're so traditional. I never thought you've gone for traditional English country garden.
Yeah, I do. You know what, I'm really quite a fan of it. I mean, I do like contemporary gardens. But I kind of like both. But yeah, I I'm probably, a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to gardens. I don't know, yeah. Wow. I'd love to see, you know, a striped lawn. That's really old-fashioned to me, isn't it? But I do like quite contemporary plants. So the hydrangeas I like are the more contemporary types. And I do tend to, when I plant, you know, I don't plant in a, you know, in a hodgepodge of kind of cottage garden. I quite like to have blocks, not big blocks, like a car park, but, you know, I decent groups, so and repeat. I know repeat my planting a lot as well. So it's probably it's traditional with a contemporary twist.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. Thea, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's like, oh, I just love speaking to you. So if people wanted to follow you on any social medias, what's the best place they could find you?
Probably Twitter. I'm at Thea Pitcher. Mm-hmm. Facebook, I'm Thea Sales.
Uh-huh. You're married
so,
now.
But yes. I'm married.
Oh, well, huge. Oh, you're just a joy. And I just want to say once again, thank you for employing me for that geodesic dome. It was painful, but it opened up a whole new world for me. So thank you very much. It's been lovely speaking to you on the TV Carpenter podcast.
Oh, likewise.
What was really nice, you even got some vegetable planting top tips to finish off. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Thea. She really is a fountain of all knowledge and a lovely lady to boot. If you want to contact me, you can contact me at the TV Carpenter podcast. And if you have any questions about any of my guests or any guests that are coming up, or if you have any ideas for any guests that you would like me to interview, contact me on my website. All I have to say is a huge thank you to my sponsor, Thorn Down Paint. Don't forget, you can get 15% discount on any of their online purchases. If you put in the code TV Carpenter when you go into checkout on their website, which is thorndown.co.uk, you can take full advantage of that 15% discount. And once again, stay home, stay safe, and thank you for listening to the TV Carpenter podcast.